Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Right Side. It is episode 21. Kim, our podcast is officially legal to consume certain substances.
I'm not sure we need that in addition to kind of the crazy talks we get into, but sure, yeah.
So this week we have one of my old podcast co-hosts on, but we haven't had him on here yet, but I know him so well. Matthias, aka Political Math on Twitter. How are you?
I'm okay. It's nice to be podcasting too. Yeah. That's what we're doing again. I can't remember what we call it anymore. I've just been gone for so long.
Yeah, it's just like, I know, it was kind of like when I knew that you were coming on, I was like, I kind of just feel like sitting back and having a conversation with two people I know fairly well that I've podcasted with for quite a while. Kim, do you want to tell everybody what they can do when they listen to our podcast?
Yes, you, of course, need to subscribe to this fantastic show. You can do that by going to iTunes and looking our show up, The Right Side with Andrea and Kim. Or you can go to therightside.us and click on the subscribe button, which will take you there as well. We've had so many great guests on our show. We've had Bridget Fetisi. We've had Randy Barnett. We've had Jake Russo. We've had just so many. And then Matthias, I mean, another fabulous guest today. Oh, so thanks. You should subscribe. And when you do, after you listen to our show, review our show. And we are worth 5 out of 5, aren't we, Andrea? I mean, a solid 5 out of 5.
Yes, and definitely mostly because it's our favorite number.
Yes, and it is our favorite number, yes.
All right, so we can start off by first, on Friday evening, of course, we got the news that George Herbert Walker Bush, who was born in 1924, passed away. Yesterday, the influx of just really moving tributes, I posted a couple things, particularly the Christmas after the 1992 election where he lost his reelection bid, had Dana Carvey, who portrayed him so well on Saturday Night Live, had him there, and they kind of laughed together about it. And it was really touching to see that kind of like camaraderie between, which is kind of how we always thought of like things like the White House Correspondents' Dinner, before it just became a roast, it's like right. When you had the people there, you would kind of get together, and it wasn't just, it was a good natured back and forth between, the comedians that play the politicians or mock the politicians, which, we're supposed to, as in America, we're supposed to mock our politicians all we want to.
It's particularly interesting for me to remember, to look back at, how George H.W. Bush reacted to a bunch of stuff. Because if you remember how his son was treated, how George W. Bush was treated as president, the press was always horrible, both to H.W. Bush and to George W. Bush. And it's sort of like, this is kind of a cliche, but this is how you get Trump, right? Like, George H.W. Bush was a kind, gracious man who invited the guy who roasts him over to the, and they all laughed together. And George W. Bush was the same way. And there's a sort of expectation that Republicans should expect to get completely, like, unfairly treated by the media and be bigger people about it. And Democrats don't have to be bigger people about it. They can, because they just get great treatment by the media. And so that they, you watch how H.W. and W. responded to the sort of media criticism they got with grace and gentleness. And then the media still just hated their guts all the time. And that's how you get Trump.
Well, this goes, right? Yeah, and it kind of goes back to... Oh, sorry, go.
Yeah, if the only time you appreciate these people is when they die, then you're going to find that people get real tired of that.
Well, and it kind of goes back to what we saw right after the midterm elections a couple weeks ago, where, Martha McSally was lauded for her, such a, kind and gracious, concession speech that she made, but then when it came to Georgia with oh goodness, I cannot think of her name right now.
Stacey Abrams.
Yes, Stacey Abrams. She, like, you know, she bitterly did not concede, still will not call the guy that won. I can't think of his name either. And all I can think of is Governor Deal, but it's not Deal.
Brian Kemp.
Brian Kemp. Sorry, I'm like, totally not? Spacing all sure. these names.
Anything else you need?
See, you know, it's like I thought that my memory would get better when I decided to, like, remove, you know, like, drinking and things like that from my life, and it's not helping. It's actually, it seems to be going the opposite direction.
Now, we're just elderly, that's why.
Yes, exactly. No, but yes, exactly. That she was not if you know, someone on the right had given that kind of concession speech, it would have been like, oh, why is she so bitter and stuff like that? But instead, you had places like MSNBC giving her a home to go and talk about how, and refuse to say that Brian Kemp is the legitimate governor of Georgia. So it's you know, people like Noah Rothman, who were on Morning Joe and things like that, had to sit there and tell the entire panel, look, this should not be acceptable. But it goes back to that same thing where Republicans are expected to give these gracious concession speeches, but Democrats get to basically bitch and moan during their concession speeches about how unfair and how, you know, polling places were closed down, and there's obviously voter suppression and things like that.
Go ahead, Kimberly.
No, go ahead, guess Matthias.
there's a certain extent. So there's been a lot of talk about voter fraud in North Carolina 9, I think, and it's real hard. Like, there's a lot of data points that I'm not going to bore you with, because I'm either going to spend time looking them up or just simply get them wrong. But if you look real quick, carefully, it does look concerning. However, some of the stuff that they talk about with, oh, well, this obviously constitutes voter fraud, is the sort of thing where I'm like, okay, that does seem to be bad. And then this was voter fraud in to the advantage of the Republican. I look at that and I'm like, okay, that does seem bad. But I also don't trust the media to give me the full context. Like, do these sorts of actions that I would think constitute voter fraud, do they happen in other places? Because some people were saying, oh, well, they do this in California and they do this in Michigan. And I'm like, okay, like, I don't trust you, random crazy internet person, to tell me the truth. But I also mm-hmm. don't trust the media to tell me the truth. And so I'm kind of left in this weird space where I'm either going to have to go look it up, or I'm just going to have to, like, just kind of, you know, push it off to the side and say, I don't care.
Yeah, it is North Carolina 9. I actually got a phone call yesterday about North Carolina 9 from the Decision Desk HQ guy. And, you know, he basically said, like, look, this is so concerning that it's looking like he did it in the primary and did it in the general election, the primary where he ousted the incumbent Republican. And now it looks like he did it two times in a row in the exact same districts and the exact same, precincts and stuff like that. So now they're looking at not even redoing the general election from November, but redoing the primary election from the spring. So, I mean, that's an incredible turn of events and something that we've rarely, if ever, seen, you know, of actual voter fraud, if that is actually comes to light, that that's what happened. So that is an interesting thing to be, you know, that we are kind of looking at who do we kind of believe and trust. Given that the media has such a bad, the media should not be so underwater on its job approval and trust, you know, I mean, they are really underwater.
Go ahead, Kim. Please, Kim.
I just have two points. Firstly, with the voter fraud and everything, we talked about this when we had, I think, Ben Howe on. We were talking about voter fraud, voter suppression, all this stuff. And I think obviously, if we're going to be honest, we need to admit that it does happen, but that it's not as widespread as people believe. And because there seems to be a problem in North Carolina in this one, you know, particular race, it does not mean that Brian Kemp was involved in voter suppression. And in fact, I wrote a piece for Red State about this. AG Conservative went through all the points that this writer had when it came to Stacey Abrams' race. And here, you know, he said this shows voter suppression and voter fraud and all this, and these voter rolls were purged and these wait times were really long. And AG Conservative, who is, you know, an asset, he does all the work that journalists should actually do. He went through and everything, and no, there's not a case of widespread voter fraud. You can't even point out to where, you know, people were suppressed or kept from voting. The voting purge stuff, he answered. So, I mean, yes, are there instances of voter fraud? Of course, but it's not widespread, and it's not like Republicans do this every election and every win is a stolen win or something. And then, as you know, we're talking about George H.W. Bush, and the media reaction to his death, it has been so surreal to see the same people and hear the same people say certain things about him when he was president, and even, you know, his son when he was president. Now they have these glowing, like, articles about them, not all, but most of them. And it's just so strange how in the age of Trump, everything that they used to think was the worst, and how the Bush family was the devil, and how compared to Trump, they're all kind of like, well, they're Republicans, so we don't love them, but they're not as evil, quote, evil as Trump is. And I'm not a huge Trump fan or anything, but it's so strange, the contrast and the like the pausing to say, well, this was a very decent man, when, like we said, decades ago, they were saying, you know, opposite. But Trump kind of puts all these things in like an extreme light. It's just, it's very strange. I've noticed it. And I know you guys have too, over the past few days.
Well, look at what they did. Like, I was talking to my fiance the other day about yesterday, because we were talking about George H.W. Bush. We were talking about, look at what they did to decent men like John McCain and Mitt Romney in 2008 and 2012. Now, yes. John McCain, I mean, everybody was, the media and everything was talking about how great John McCain was, you know, when he passed away in August, but it's like, they questioned his ability to stay alive from between 2008 and 2016. You know, it's like they were really vicious towards him. And Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was, you know, a murderer and...
Well, the binders full of women was the worst thing ever. But then when you compare it to Trump saying, oh, I can do whatever I want to women because when you're a celebrity, they let you do it. Then they're like, well, the binders is okay. We love Mitt Romney.
Yeah. No.
Anyway.
Matthias, you were going to say it. You had something. Did you forget it? Or
oh no, I was just going to say. I'm like, I kind of want to get to our other topics, but I was just going to say something like I feel like we would be able to, like, the North Carolina 9 debacle would be less of a debacle if Democrats were a little bit more willing to look at ways to stop voter fraud, but they seem to not be very willing to look at ways to stop voter fraud. And I suspect that there's going to be this sort of weird, funny, weird thing. Like, if I were in North Carolina and I were a Republican, I'd be like, oh yeah, this totally looks like voter fraud. We should really make some really, really harsh rules around voter fraud and start, you know, and start trying to shop that around to the country. Because Democrats, if they see voter fraud from a Republican, are going to be like, oh, yeah, we need to stop voter fraud. And then you could actually get them on board with voter fraud legislation. If they feel like it's something that's helping Republicans, they'll totally want to stop it. But if they feel like it's helping Democrats, then they're like, there is no voter fraud.
And it does come, you know, when they talk about strict penalties for voter fraud, like I have... especially in light of the fact that a woman who is a permanent resident in the country was just recently convicted and sentenced to 8 years for voting when she was only a permanent resident. But Jeffrey Epstein is getting, like, what, 14 months in prison for multiple credible rapes and child molestations, is pretty messed up. And but that's a totally different topic for a totally different time. But the one thing about the whole George H.W. Bush thing is this phenomenon. I really wanted to get your guys' opinions really quick. This whole phenomenon about couching when someone passes away, couching your, oh, I, you know, ripped this guy, but he wasn't my ideal politician, which I actually saw someone say. What politician is an ideal politician? There is no such thing because they're humans. But why do you always have to couch it with, I didn't necessarily agree with this person, but rest in peace, dude. Like, why can't, there is something called, if you can't say something nice, just don't say anything. You aren't compelled. You aren't being, having your, you know, hand held over a flame until you say something nice.
Well, my take on that, I posted, I don't think I put it on Twitter. I think I put it on Facebook, which I like to stir the political pot of Facebook at times because there's enough puppy pictures and cute things on there. But I put that he wasn't a perfect, but he was a good man and a dedicated servant to his country and everything. And I don't know, I don't know if that's mean, maybe from someone's perspective,
that's not,
it might be a little harsh. But I mean, that's what I didn't put anything beyond that. I didn't like dig into, well, I didn't like this policy or this policy. I mean, he's not perfect. Some of the, I don't know, kind of looking back at a politician or, you know, whomever we admire, once they die, we seem to gloss over everything. And I don't think we, you know, should, but we don't need to, you know, ridicule someone in their death, especially when we're all imperfect and we all make mistakes. But I mean, I just put, he's not a perfect man, but he was a good one and he did this and this and this. And then I put a quote about him. But no, I have seen, especially, I mean, this is completely opposite of putting like something a little bit critical about him. But the AP, I'm sure you guys saw that tweet, their first like breaking tweet about his passing was horrible. Mm-hmm. It said all these things about him. There's nothing nice about him. And I don't think it mentioned his World War II service in there. And it was, you know, said all these things that they believe he did wrong. It was, that was beyond what, you know.
Yeah, it started out calling him a patrician, which is never meant in a nice way. And then went on to talk about how he, you know, completely sucked at the economy. So.
And they actually retweeted this afternoon. They said, and I just pulled it up, the AP said, "We've deleted a tweet and revised a story on the death of President George H.W. Bush because the tweet in the opening of the story referenced his 1992 electoral defeat and omitted his World War II service. Have you not had this waiting in the wings for how many years? Like, you just now saying that you think you should revise it?" Nice.
Well, there's such a insular, and this is definitely one of those things where I'm like, there needs to be more intellectual and ideological diversity in the newsroom, because they kind of like look at, they do this thing where they look over what they've written and other people look over, and editor, you know, someone writes it, someone, the editor looks over it, and everybody kind of goes through it, but they're so blinded by their own ideological narrowness. They don't have anybody in the newsroom to be like, "That sounds like that's a good idea. All right, you know that one." And then they let it out into the real world, and people are like, "The freaking crap is wrong with you people."
Yeah, it is kind of a different kind of world. I mean, I'm sure that I think that probably tech gets a little bit. You know, we've had this whole thing happen with. Well, we can go ahead and talk about. I guess we can move into. Kind of Jesse Kelly, the whole thing around Jesse Kelly getting removed from Twitter, that they kind of seem to be also another insular place where, and Matthias, I know that you know, have, you know, being in the kind of like tech industry, have dealt with like kind of thing, which is why you're, you know, an anonymous person, because you do deal with a kind of like echo chamber of thoughts and opinions on things that just kind of filter back. And so when you get to, when Jack Dorsey comes out, the founder of Twitter or the CEO of Twitter, comes out and like, you know, he assures Congress that yes, there's a bias, but we do our best. But then there's clear examples, you know, people when Jesse Kelly got, you know, removed from Twitter, who I think we can all say like, you know, he, again, not perfect, a flawed guy. I, you know, it's like, I wasn't a follower of his. It's one of those things where you kind of sit back and you say, okay, but why is Louis Farrakhan? And that was kind of the constant refrain. Louis Farrakhan is still here, where he has a Twitter up that says, "I'm not anti-Semitic, I'm anti-termite." Matthias, what did you have to, thoughts thoughts on that.
Well, so, like, I know a lot of people whom I like on Twitter really like Jesse Kelly. Apparently, in real life, he is a stand-up dude and so on and so forth. I dislike him. I don't like him. People tell me that, like, he's really playing a part on Twitter, and okay, well, I don't like that part. I think his bit is grotesque and misogynistic and dumb. I don't like him. He's annoying. But for the most part, I don't think about him because I was mostly ignoring him, and then he kept popping up in my, you know, from my mutuals, retweeting him. And then I think I might have either muted him or blocked him because I just got tired of it. And then he keeps popping up occasionally, mostly from people that I follow who are like, isn't Jesse Kelly a horrible person? And I'm like, yeah, that's why I don't follow him. To me, that's the solution on Twitter. Like, if you don't like somebody, don't follow them and don't talk about them. You're not a child. You don't need Twitter to block them for you. Like, I don't get, Jesse Kelly absolutely, I think a lot of his tweets are terrible. Like, just mean-spirited. But he's not Milo. Milo absolutely was, like, I mean, and he played coy with this, but he absolutely was trying to sick his followers to attack other people and make their experience on Twitter terrible. He was doing that on purpose, right? And Jesse Kelly never did that kind of thing. Like, good or bad, he wasn't hurting anyone. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and that's what bugged me about, Twitter knocking, kicking him off. He wasn't doing anything. And we can talk about some of the conservative reaction, which was, I think, just grotesque from a lot of the moderate conservatives. I find them tedious, even though I consider myself a moderate conservative, so...
Like, what kind of responses? Like, the...
What annoys...
Yes, the people celebrating the fact that he got kicked off. Like, the people are like, ha ha ha, yeah, this is great, he's a bad, blah blah blah. And I'm like, then don't follow him! Do you really need big old Twitter to protect you from the mean old meanie people? Like, seriously, are we children here? The answer is, of course, we're tiny little children who can't take care of ourselves. That's the answer.
Kim.
I'm done.
Yes, I'm all for blocking and muting, and if someone's being obviously violent or like Farrakhan, I don't think you should be on there. But other than those extremes, deal with it by blocking and muting someone. You're big kids; you can move on and deal with the online interactions like an adult. But like you're saying, people that were celebrating it, that bothered me. But something that also bothered me is when conservatives, for some reason, believe that they are owed a social media platform because I don't know why. They think it's some sort of free speech issue. Now, we can get into the fact that Twitter has certain rules and they don't abide by them, which seemed to be the case with Jesse Kelly's removal and other instances when they don't. But as far as Twitter offering you a platform and you should have one just because, no, you shouldn't. And I don't think conservatives should look to social media in Silicon Valley as like this, whomever, someone that is going to carry the water for us, like, and carry our little message along, because they're not there to be our friend. They don't actually like us. They like the fact that we log on, but I'm fully aware that someday I might be kicked off Twitter because of my opinions on abortion or transgenderism or whatever. And yeah, that will suck, but I don't believe that I'm owed this platform just because. I mean, it's not like Jesse Kelly was kicked off the internet. It's not like Laura Loomer was kicked off the internet. I mean, they can, go talk elsewhere and wherever they want. So this idea that conservatives should be given this platform and that it's this like the worst thing ever. No, it's not. And my gosh, in the list of top social media sites and platforms, Twitter is not even in the top 10. And so people think it's like the center of the world. It's actually not. I mean, log off. You're not doing much, but just kind of stirring your thoughts around in this little chamber and trying to amass followers. And you're not owed that. You really aren't. That's my beef with it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Jonah Goldberg kind of made this point on the Remnant podcast, where he was talking about how he always kind of uses his wife as kind of a gauge on, like, whenever he gets like a little bit too excited about something going on Twitter, he'll go in and like tell his wife, like, guess what? And she'll be like, okay. He kind of realizes that just because something's going on Twitter does not mean that that people outside of Twitter are even like aware that this stuff is going on.
Exactly.
And don't care. It's like how I always say, you know, people are always talking about, oh, well, you know, Fox News is doing this and MSNBC is doing this and CNN is doing this. I'm like, you know how many percentage of Americans on any given day watch cable news? I was like, the most popular channel on cable TV is the Food Network. And it's like 10 times the viewership. It's like, it's not even close. I mean, it's not like we kind of... And because the media is focused on the media, of course they're going to focus on these, you know, that's what sites like Mediaite are all about. You know, they're constantly watching the news and what's going on in the media. So it's kind of, you know, it's always self-reflective for journalists that are writing about, oh, well, their journalists always see Twitter as this great way to get up to them. And it is. Twitter is an amazing place. You get news before it's even breaking practically on a lot of things. It's an invaluable tool, but to think that the public at large has any idea that they aren't just following, you know, Kim Kardashian and Kanye West. I mean, that's what I think most people, obviously by the follower counts, you know.
I disagree with Kimberly on this. Twitter does not have a legal responsibility to do basically anything, but I think they have I think if you're building a social, if you're building a content agnostic social platform or social media platform, you absolutely do have a moral obligation to keep it, to abide by the general rules of free speech within certain limitations. But I think, like, I mean, I'm not like, oh, let's put porn on Facebook because, you know, Facebook has these content warnings and blah, 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 blah. I think the biggest problem I have is this bait and switch. The social media bait and switch is, I think, morally repulsive, and I actually wouldn't mind, like, I'm not a small government. I've decided that maybe I'm not so much of a small government conservative because I wouldn't mind the government going after Facebook and Twitter for this sort of thing. Or Facebook had this thing when they first started, they're like, hey, put together a page for your group or your business or whatever, and then have people like it, and when people like it, then they will see all of your stuff from your page in their feed. And then so that was the bait. And then when all the companies did it, they switched it. And they're like, oh, we're just kidding. You have to pay. You have to pay money to get stuff into your user's feed, even if they like it. And this was after companies spent millions of dollars trying to get people to like their pages because they were like, hey, it's a direct access to our customer. That is complete bait and switch. And it's the same thing with Twitter. Twitter's like, we are a free speech place. Come here, talk, blah, 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 blah. And then Twitter's like, oh, we changed our rules of service. So now that you've built up a community, now that you've built up a movement, we're just going to kick you off for no reason other than ha, ha, ha.
I mean, I agree with you that they should do it a certain way, but I also don't think that we should expect them to do it a certain way, and we shouldn't put all our eggs in that little basket because they're not on our side, really.
Well, but my problem with that is, like, it doesn't matter which basket you put all your egg you put your eggs into. You could put your eggs in five different baskets, and the basket maker could just give you the finger one day, and then you're screwed. And I think there needs to be a.
But do we really want the government to get? Do we really want the government to get involved in Twitter? I certainly don't.
I don't want.
I support Jack Phillips to make.
I don't want.
I support
want
Jack
them
Phillips'
to.
Right to sell cakes to certain individuals. So why shouldn't I support Twitter's right to make its own decisions?
Because the whole point of Jack Phillips making cakes thing is that there are other cake makers. There are other places.
Yeah, there's other sites. You can go to Gab. You can.
There is not another site like Twitter. There is
the
site.
Internet,
There is not another
and
site
even
like
though
Facebook.
you might
There's
not have
not.
the same number of followers elsewhere, you can still go. The internet isn't closed off to you. So your problem is that you want the same number of followers everywhere, or it's just not fair. So I don't think that's worth the government getting involved.
No, I want a widely distributed platform that people generally go to. There's not another search engine. There's Google. If you want to make money, there's Google, and then there's not Google. There's making money with Google and not making money. Those are your two options. If you want to reach people, there's Facebook, there's Twitter, and there's nothing.
I think this will all
Yeah, but it's no one is.
Maybe.
No one's required to be given a platform just because.
I think this will all.
Nobody has a right to a business.
I think this will all come.
I mean, we have rules around advertising. We have rules around advertising and who is allowed, like and you can't block certain advertisers off certain platforms, right? Like, we have rules around political advertisements. We totally
right,
do. The FTC was designed for this. And I don't want the government to get involved, and the way for the government to not get involved is for Twitter to like put its big boy pants on and be a platform and not an editorial, an editorial content management system.
I think that it will all come down to whether or not, and this is being discussed by a lot of, you know, I mean, between tech companies and the government and, you know, on journalists and editorial boards deciding to advocate whether or not Twitter and Facebook should be put under the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and whether they are publishers or not. And if they are publishers, then they will be put under the same onus to not, like Matthias was saying, to not basically cut people off based on their ideology and things like that. Like you can't block a certain, you know, certain companies from being able to advertise in certain places. And I think that because, and like we, like, you know, Kim, we've talked about before on this podcast, we're still in kind of, you know, a relatively infancy phase of Facebook and Twitter.
Oh,
these companies
yes.
have barely been around for a mm-hmm. decade. And so I think we're all going to kind of see whether or not Twitter and Facebook, if they don't get their act together, if they don't want to be regulated, then and be put under the Telecommunications Act, then they need to stop this because this gets them under the spotlight. And that's that, I think, is what where I stand is like if they don't want to be put under the spotlight, then they have
to
stop.
And if it does, they'll have to deal with that. Yeah.
I see Twitter the same way as I see like billboards, right? You have a billboard owner and he has a certain, like, you should be able to pay for a billboard. You should be able to pay for a billboard and put what you want up on that billboard within certain limitations, right? But for the most part, if you go and you pay to have the billboard, then that billboard owner, like, he has a responsibility to give you something. And then you can, and if he doesn't give it to you, you can sue for discrimination. Now, the trick with Twitter and Facebook is that they're free, except they're not free. They're collecting all of your information. Right, mm-hmm. And so you've given them all this information for them to suddenly turn around and be like, ha ha ha, you can't do anything with us anymore. Well, they've already gotten your information. They've already made the asset out of you for them to turn around and say, well, we got the stuff we needed out of you. Go screw yourself. That's not okay.
Anyway. I mean, it might come down to where there's rules applied to them, but as of right now, there's nothing, and I don't think conservatives should act like it's the end of the world when they're banned from Twitter or kicked off Twitter, honestly. And especially like the Laura Loomer stuff, handcuffing yourself to the front door of Twitter. Shut
fun.
Up, girl. Please go sit down. Log on to Gab and talk about your experience.
I think she was sitting down for a while there. At least I saw pictures of her sitting down, and yeah, that was a whole other. But we can go into because she was taking it. She was wearing a Star of David, equating it to being Jewish in the Holocaust. But someone who has been roasted on Twitter and off of Twitter and lost his contributorship, Mark Lamont Hill. Who has always been, he used to be a contributor to Fox News for a long time. I remember back in the knots, when I still watched Fox News, Mark Lamont Hill was regularly on there. But liberal professor, but also apparently advocating for the annihilation of the Jewish state of Israel, in front of the UN, no less, which is not surprising.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that he was. I mean, and here's why. Because I think we should take him at his word. Because I think when he said that this is what this word means, blah, 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 blah. I think he can be wrong about that, but I think that's what it means. I think he was saying this is what this is what I'm saying when I use those words. And I think we should have enough grace to say, okay. Anyway. I don't think he was advocating for the destruction of the Jewish state.
Because do you think he was being anti-Semitic at all?
No.
I mean, he's friends with Farrakhan, though. How can we think he's not anti-Semitic?
I don't think he's anti-Semitic in a Farrakhan sort of way. I think he might be anti-Israel, but I think there's a lot of wiggle room between hating Jews and advocating for a Palestinian state. I think there has to be a lot of wiggle room there, or we're all in a lot of trouble. So I don't know.
Well, as far as him getting kicked off of his contributorship to CNN, I'm fine with that. They made their own decision to do that. I mean, I guess you could go either way with what Matthias is saying, but I mean, it was obviously their decision to have him as a contributor or not. But some have said that he should be fired from, you know, the university, Temple U, where he works, because of what he said. Now, I don't at all believe that he should be fired, even if his remarks were completely anti-Semitic. No, you shouldn't be fired from your job because of what you say. You know, you share your personal opinions elsewhere. I don't think you should. I've said that before in the past with other leftist professors who've said the worst stuff. And no, like, what was that woman? That woman who I think said something when Barbara Bush passed away, and she was horrible, and people were calling for her to be fired from her university job and her tenured professorship. Mm. No, you shouldn't be fired at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's what tenure is for, you know, so that professors can, you know, push limits. I mean, do they get to be assholes about it? Sure. But that's what tenure is for.
Yeah, they do.
For.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you know, the extrapolation of what, you know, if we're going to give the you know, grace to Mark Lamont Hill for what he said, is that a lot of the, you know, the extrapolation of, you know, advocate of the what he said is that, you know, a lot of times, and the reason that there isn't a Palestinian state to this point is because, I mean, there's a lot of history there. You can, you know, argue that maybe Israel is, you know, a little bit too on the defensive all the time, or on the offensive all the time. But continuously, we've seen that the Palestinians, or the influencers behind the Palestinians, which, you know, Hamas and you know, other groups, even American groups that go in and agitate out from you know, outside, is that it's an all or nothing. It's a, you know, it's fighting over Jerusalem, things like that. You know, there's when you get down to the nitty gritty, and that's why there's not a Palestinian state yet, is because there's so many people and influencers at an impasse of what should be done. I mean, you know, there's all the, you know, kind of history, but then there's also the theology behind it. And, you know, this goes all the way back to 1947, 1949, when there was, you know, all, and of course, the 1960s and 70s, when there were wars again. And it's so complex that you kind of sit back and you say, like, I can't figure all this out. And that's why I'm so glad that there are, you know, smarter people than I am that know this kind of stuff about what's going on with Israel and things like that. But I do think that Mark Lamont Hill, the idea that, you know, Mark Lamont Hill should be removed from his livelihood is something that, you know, we shouldn't be saying, like, you know, that people can't say things. I'm sorry, you get to say things. You get, and like Temple University said, he has a right to a First Amendment right to say his own private thoughts wherever. And he was at the UN. Now, the UN is notoriously, you know, anti-Israel, but it's, you know, and I think a lot of people, you know, do take if you're anti-Israel, you're anti-Semitic point of view. And I can, you know, often be convinced of, you know, like, okay, well, there's this, and then there's this, but then there's also this. I mean, just because one thing is equal or is similar to the other thing doesn't mean that it is the same thing. So I don't know. I have no answers on this, obviously.
My thought on that for is basically this. He claims that he didn't mean it in the anti-Semitic way, and I bet you he won't do it again. I bet you he won't say that again.
Yeah.
Because he knows that it can be interpreted that way, and knowing that it can be interpreted that way, he doesn't say. I can totally believe that he has heard that phrase from other people whom he knew and respected, mm-hmm. and maybe they were using it in an anti-Semitic way or not, and he just like we're generous to people that we like, right? And so I totally believe he could pick up that phrase and has just not really ever run into someone who thought that phrase was anti-Semitic. And now he shouldn't be able to do that. The man has a PhD and he's supposed to be an expert in Palestinian relations, but he was at least claimed that that was not how he meant it. And if he's claiming that's not how he meant it, and he doesn't use it to do it again in the future, my inclination is to let it slide, even from like the CNN. I didn't want CNN to kill his contract. I think it's just a bad precedent. Now, they have every right to do it, but I just don't think they should.
Yeah, I'm a little tired from the left and the right people, no matter what happens, saying, oh, they should be fired. Or are you? I even had someone say to me, there's some journalist in Canada who said some horrible thing after an accident. I think it was an accident where a youth hockey team, there was a bus crash and several of the white youth, you know, male, they were killed. And she said something about how it's the patriarchy that's like chipping away at them. Good job. And she was a journalist. And someone tweeted to me, well, do you know where her employer information is? Because I think she should be fired. And I was like, I hate everything she said about this. But no, she shouldn't be fired. And I think the same applies to everyone else. I mean, like you said, Matthias, CNN, they can do what they want. Is it the best move? That's debatable. But no, don't go after everyone's livelihood just because you don't like what they said.
I think we've established this precedent, especially, and I think the, is it Roseanne Barr, right? Mm-hmm. I think she was such a high-profile scalp over the, you know, over her Twitter stuff. And I didn't think she should be, but she's, I didn't think she should be fired for that. Even though I thought it was terrible. But I mean, I'm a big fan of Grace. The problem is that it's such a high profile scalp that was taken. You know, it was one of the most popular TV shows in the country. And now everybody knows, oh, if you say something bad, we can get you fired. Like, that is common knowledge now. And so people feel like if they get offended by something, they should get that person fired. And I think that's wrong.
Yeah.
I think it was wrong
then.
I agree. I think it's wrong in every instance. I mean,
it gives way too much power to the mob, which we saw with what's his face at Mozilla. And that was how many years ago now? They learned that they could do it then.
Yeah.
And
Brendan Eich, yeah.
Yeah, Brendan Eich, yeah.
Yeah, he that has been one of my favorite stories because he left Mozilla and went and started his own browser. And that browser is now eating into Mozilla's market share.
Oh,
which
that's
is
amazing.
Great. Yeah, he just went out and started his own browser. Just, you know,
cause. Yeah, nope. That's one of the things that you kind of sit there and, you know, what was her name? Has her plane landed yet? You know, I mean, she
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, anyway. thank goodness. I mean, honestly, it's the perfect example for why, from the left and the right, it's the perfect example, modern example of why tenure matters. And these things come from not even like, you know, bad opinion, you know, like what we would say as offensive opinions, but offensive opinions used to be that the earth was not, you know, the center of the universe kind of thing. You know, I mean, that used to get you killed.
Whole idea that people think that the holiest thing ever is not being offended. And if I'm offended, that is the worst possible thing that could happen to me, being offended. Who cares? You're offended. So what next? What's your next, you know, argument? I don't think that's the biggest deal. I may get offended at times. It's not the biggest deal in the world. You may get offended, and you will get offended in this life, and you don't need to go seek out someone else's destruction because of it.
If someone ever came to me and told me that one of my team members or someone who worked for me said something on Twitter, the worst thing that I would ever do is go to them and say, block your account. But I would never, I would never fire someone for something they said on Twitter, even if what they said was like actual literal like calls to violence. I would be like, well, you know, don't take it up with me. Take it up with the police, right? Like, if you think this is an actual literal call to violence, go to the police with it. It's not my job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because yeah. people say crazy things. Twitter's a terrible place for that. And I just I feel like there's even if I were within my rights to fire someone for saying something on Twitter, I wouldn't do it just as it because I feel like we need a culture of free speech as well as a legal principle of free speech where we basically are kind of okay with people saying stuff. So.
Yeah, it's always kind of interesting and you know, certain, because like just this week, because of all the Jesse Kelly stuff, I found out that someone tried to get me fired from a job once, and I'm just kind of like, okay, like this is just bizarre that, you know, oh, you know, you don't want this now, but you the same person, same Twitter account, tried to get me fired from someplace, you know, from somewhere. And it's just like,
yeah.
it's very amusing to me. So to wrap up things, Matthias, what are you baking this week, and are you watching anything Christmassy as we enter the first? Today's the first day of Hanukkah, but it's the first Sunday of Advent, right? Or does that start next week? Yeah, Advent.
I think so. I'm not sure exactly when Advent is, but I am making Christmas cookies. Actually, I'm chilling chocolate snaps right now, which are like ginger snaps but chocolate. I made baklava thumbprint cookies, which are like they're a cookie, and you kind of put an indentation in it, and then I pour honey and walnuts into the indentation, bake it, and so you get this nice, wonderful, nutty, honey taste. I made cardamom coffee cookies, and I'm hopefully going to make some biscotti later today.
Nice. And today is the first day of Advent.
Okay. Yeah, and then we watch, every year we watch White Christmas. And
oh, I love that movie.
Oh, it's so great.
It's so
and
good.
My girls are just the right age to really enjoy the dancing and the singing. And my little guy, every week someone gets to pick a movie that we watch. And my little guy picked Snoopy Christmas. And because it's only 25 minutes, we let them watch Snoopy Christmas and The Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
Oh, nice.
Together. Do you know those two movies came out 1 year? Those two TV specials came out 1 year apart.
Wow.
1965, Snoopy came out. 1966, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas came out. And those poor kids must have gone into 1967 and be like, what's coming on this year? And the answer is nothing. Nothing ever. Nothing will ever be as good as those two. Right.
You know, I saw this great tweet about how it was like what's something that makes sense to you, like that you understand more now that you're older that you wouldn't have thought of as a child, and it was why the Grinch wanted to spend Christmas at home alone with his dog.
Yeah, no, kids in the 60s had it great. 65, Charlie Brown Christmas. 66, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. 67, 68, 69, we land on the moon, and they're like, the world is perfect and amazing, and it's only going to get better. And they're wrong. That was the height of everything.
And then the 70s.
It just got worse from there on out. So.
Yeah, Adam Kroll always says that the best time in history was pre-AIDS, mid-Coke. So, but Kim, what are you watching, and are you baking anything?
Watching White Christmas. I actually just watched that the other day. My son just watched the Rudolph, the live action or stop action, whatever you call it.
Stop action.
From, was that the 70s? I can't, or was that the, no, I don't think it was the 60s. It might have been the 70s. But I love that one. That is such a good one. And
the one that everybody had a big problem with? Oh, sorry.
I think so, yeah. But I love that one.
Yeah.
And then also, we recently watched Home Alone, and I'm not going to lie, I love that movie. It reminds me of my 90s childhood, and I still think it's funny. It's great. And as far as baking, I always do chocolate peanut butter no-bake cookies, which are, well, that's not baking, I guess. But then a batch of the chocolate bark pretzels and the chocolate and sea salt almonds are so good. So we're going to do that recently.
Yeah, I see that you're getting crafty. I don't know if you're sharing that stuff on Twitter, but... Boy, Kim starts working from home, and she becomes a crafty person.
No, that was the one crafty thing. Okay, so what I did is I painted the word love and family that I found at Hobby Lobby. I vomited it up all over the word joy, and then put that on my wall, and it looks good, but that's the only crafty thing I've done this year, and it's the end of the song.
Yeah, no. I see the fact that you're visiting Hobby Lobby more often. I foresee a decade from now Kim having her own sewing room in her house.
That is a lie. I'm not
No, so I mean, I'm
what are you watching and baking?
I'm not doing anything. I'm getting ready to, like, the next year is going to be the early next year. January is going to be such. So I'm not doing. I did put one strand of colored lights, because colored lights mean you like Christmas. White lights mean you like the antiseptic Gen X version of Christmas in the 90s and 2000s that I cannot sign off on.
Two white lights.
Yeah, of course.
I do.
I'm kidding.
I'm just glad it's legal to say Merry Christmas now. That was just
now that Donald Trump is present. Yeah.
Yeah.
Trump brought it back.
Yeah. I mean, say what you will about the man, but at least my children aren't afraid to say Happy Christmas. That's my problem. I say Happy Christmas.
Oh, yeah. It's like the British.
I say Happy Christmas just because I like.
Oh, like the British.
Like the British, yes.
The British, yeah. But okay.
Because I'm a stuck-up jerk.
So now,
Happy Christmas. I'm like, I've got to, I can't be like you weirdos, like you normal people. I have to be all hoity-toity.
Yeah,
I
started watching is this British show called Fake or Fortune, which is about finding out whether works of art are fake or if they're real, that people don't have the provenance. I now say that instead of provenance, I now say provenance because I'm watching it on a British show for the art. So I started watching that. My daughter she's not here this weekend, which she normally would be. She's here next weekend. I'm sure that I will watch something Christmassy with her at that point. And as far as baking goes, while I am a fair to middling cook, I won't be baking anything, but I did sign my mom up. I'm going to see my fiance for a week next week, so there will be one more. Oh, that's the other thing. There will be one more podcast this year next weekend, but then after that, Kim and I are taking the rest of the year off, and we'll be back in the new year. But I signed my mom up to make snowball cookies and magic cookie bars to take with me on my trip. So I'll be, yeah. So I'm not baking, but I'm really good at saying, "Mommy, can you do this for me?" So, yeah. So that's my baking. Technically, I'm buying the ingredients, I think. I don't know. I've got to ask my mom if she expects me to buy ingredients too. But yeah. So that's what I'm doing. So not too Christmassy this year, actually. But anyway, Matthias, thank you so much for being on. It has been a joy. And where can everybody find you?
Thank you.
I'm sorry, what?
Where can everybody find you on the internet?
Well, I'm mostly on Twitter, at PoliticalMap. I have some stuff brewing at the Paradox Project.
Okay.
And so we'll see if I can push something out in the last in the next week or so. I've been kind of on a dry spell in terms of writing since my dad died, and kind of, you know, the fallout of that has kind of more or less consumed my entire life. So
yeah. Kim,
which you could have followed along with all of that if you follow me on Twitter.
Yes, you can go back and no, it was really like some touching tributes that you had to your dad's life, and just the last time that I saw you in person, you were dealing with the collections that he of coins that he had.
Yeah, crazy stuff. Yeah,
you know, watching this British show with these paintings where people don't know where they're from. And having, you know, talked with you about the coin collection and things like that, I'm at that point where I was thinking last night about tweeting, hey, you know, parents who, you know, think they're going to leave their kids something that's really valuable, you might want to tell them or leave, you know, more information for them so that they can not be just like having to go through a lot of pain and anguish to find out what this stuff is worth that you're leaving them, that you so thoughtfully left for them. Because a lot of those paintings, the people just, it's a pain. So it's expensive to find out, apparently. Kim, where can everybody find you?
If you don't already know, you can find me on Twitter at Southern Keeks. I mean, until Jack decides to axe my account, that is. Mm-hmm. And you can also find me on Facebook at Kimberly Ross Writer. Red State is where I sometimes write, and more frequently at Washington Examiner.
All right, and you can find me, as always, at Andrea and Ruth on Twitter and at redstate.com, and we will see you next week on another and the final podcast of 2018. Bye!